This is Jerry Grubbs, 10 December 1999, Into the Darkness and Beyond, Transcendence and Healing in the Dreams of the Bereaved.
Dreams are usually a death of an aspect of ourselves or of a relationship, and most dreams usually do mean that, but occasionally they are prophetic. And so the way I took the dream was that my baby is dying. He's growing up. He's not a child anymore. It's like a death to me to be losing my child. And so that's the way I took it. But I know now that the dream was prophetic, with the archetypes of death portrayed clearly and strongly in it. The prophecy had a definite ominous quality as I tried futilely to change what had already been put into motion. It appears that the dream was sent to prepare me for what was to come, or it could have been a warning to me that the course I was taking in my life would lead to this. Now, the Tibetans believe that dreams do indeed foretell an upcoming death. And it's actually written about in their medical texts. And they say the reason for this is either to warn you that you're on, that the path that you're leading in your life could eventually lead to this, or that it's preparing the psyche for this eventual trauma that's going to happen in your life. But I believe that that this dream was a preparation for me. It was like it was preordained. There wasn't anything I can do. It was like some bargain I had made some long time ago, and it couldn't be changed. The dream seemed to be saying that even though I would suffer a catastrophic loss of my son, I would be cared for and healed by the archetypes of the soul. The healing revealed itself in the form of a snake, often assumed by the Greek god Asclepius. The snake added a sacred dimension to the catastrophe that was to come, and it was important for me to be aware of this. After this dream, I was haunted by sensations that Mike's life would be a short one. I'm sure my son felt this too, because there was one time we were talking and he was wanting to buy something. And I just said, "Mike, you have your whole life to live ahead of you. Why do you have to have everything right away?" And when I said this, I knew I was lying. And Mike and I looked at each other, and I believe he sensed this too. And so we ended up staring at each other in wordless pain. And this continued at the hospital too. After he had actually was on the life support system, he hadn't been pronounced dead yet, his friends came over to see him. And they were telling me that Mike actually had been talking about his death for several months before he died. He knew he was going to die, and he felt it was going to be in a fight. Then on the day of his funeral, my daughter actually found some poems he had been writing before he died. And he had stashed them in the top drawer of his dresser, or his desk. And this is one of the poems that he wrote. "The fist with its all has the power of the wall. When ended, we will see who will last through it all. We will slam and scamp around on the slamming floor. With a snap and a scratch, we will kill our little scalp. With the slashing of an arm, with the breaking of bone, we will go back to the real home." Now, Jung has talked often about having two separate conscious realities. There's a superficial consciousness that's related to everyday life, and then there's the deeper consciousness that's connected to the self. And the deeper consciousness knows one's fate, one's destiny. And from time to time, the deeper consciousness will break through to the superficial consciousness with slips of the tongue or intuitive feelings and dreams and so forth. And I believe that this is what Mike and I were both experiencing. We both knew that this was our destiny together, and we were being prepared for it. But of course, even though this came into my mind, I just was not going to pay attention to it. I know there are people who are more in touch with that part of themselves, and they actually know that this is going to happen. But I was really in a state of denial. I didn't know why I was saying these things or feeling these things. Prophetic dreams are not unusual. Out of the dream series that have been sent to me, half of them have indications of prophetic dreams before the death actually occurs. And this is anywhere from several years to a few months before the death actually happens. Jung claims that because of the apparent space timelessness of the psyche, so-called telepathic phenomena are undeniable facts. He states, the point is that, like all our concepts, time and space are not axiomatic but are statistical truths. This is proved by the fact that the psyche does not fit entirely into these categories. It is capable of telepathic and precognitive perceptions. To that extent, it exists in a continuum outside time and space. We may therefore expect post-mortal phenomena to occur, which must be regarded as authentic. In 1954, Ani Eliyafi, an analyst in Zurich, put an ad in the paper asking for people to respond to a series of articles that had been out coming out in the newspaper about post-mortal phenomena and parapsychological experiences. And she ended up receiving 1,200 letters explaining 1,500 accounts of personally experienced parapsychological phenomena. This was in 1954 in Zurich, where I would say that the interest would be very low compared to what it is nowadays. Nowadays, the interest has really increased. And in Zurich, it's really a country of engineers. In a 1990 study on normal bereavement following a loss of a spouse, 42% encountered their loved ones in a dream, in dreams. 71% felt their presence. Most of them would hear or see them or even feel them, touch them. This is called haptic touching. They would feel their loved ones hovering over them in a watchful way. And close to 35% frequently communicated with their deceased as long as 13 months after the death. Now, all of this is considered normal and healthy adaptation to a loss by death. Stanislav Grof, he's a psychiatric researcher. I'm sure most of you are familiar with his name. Psychiatric researcher and founder of the transpersonal psychology movement. Researched non-ordinary states of consciousness for over 30 years. Mostly he focused on the recognition of the spiritual dimension of the psyche. And he defined what he saw as four dimensions of the human psyche. Now these are quite similar actually to Jung's theories on the psyche. The first one is the physical-oriented sensory barrier, where there's a relationship to the outer world, and that would be comparable to the persona. There's the individual unconscious with its life experiences, its traumatic memories, and unresolved conflicts, comparable to the personal unconscious. And then there's the perinatal and spiritual realm, and the transpersonal realm that transcends the limitations of time and space. And these two realms are comparable to the collective unconscious. In the last dimension, the extension of consciousness appears to go beyond earthly existence of space and time and contain images of deceased spirits, archetypes, religious entities, demons, and mythological forms. Grof claims that it is critically important to take this realm into consideration when seriously exploring experiences of psychedelic states, shamanism, religion, mysticism, rites of passage, including the state of liminality, mythology, parapsychology, and schizophrenia. And I would also include the dream state, and especially the dream state of the bereaved. When one is in a transpersonal dimension of the psyche, he or she transcends the usual limitations of consciousness, goes beyond linear time or ordinary spatial boundaries, and experiences domains that are not considered part of subjective reality. In this state, an otherworldly consciousness is experienced. I believe that bereavement dreams do contain the transpersonal dimension more strongly than any other dreams that we have. My dreams following my son's death, they were more luminous. The images in them, there seemed to be a luminosity to them. The archetypes of death were very strong and related to religious, ancient religious and death rituals. And it seemed as though I was being shown another dimension of reality, which my son was now, he had now become a part. During the 2 months, the kind of dreams I had. In the first dream I had, after he had died, I actually saw an image of him, strong image of him, sitting on the casket. And there seemed to be somewhat of a glow to him. And he was very happy and amused sitting on this casket, which would have been at the time of his funeral. I had this dream just, I think, was the day after his funeral. And then shortly after that dream, I had another one where I was actually in a cave. I found myself sitting in a cave speaking to beings from another world. And they were talking. I had been invited to be with them, and they were talking about something that was very important for me to know. And they weren't talking. There was buzzing. And I was there listening intently, knowing what was being communicated. And then it was time for me to go. So I got up and I walked back, and I walked back through a tunnel. And I didn't really want to go back. I wanted to stay there, and I turned around to see them, almost like saying goodbye. And what I saw was a bright light, and these beings were standing in front of the bright light, and it was very much like that scene from Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know, where they're walking around in front of this light. After that dream, I had the most intense feeling of peace for the whole day afterwards. And this was just a couple of weeks after my son had died. I just knew it was going to be okay. And it was going to be okay. In another dream, I was actually in the desert going through a casket, a chest that had his body parts, my son's body parts, cut up. And I was trying to put the pieces together. Now, if you know, this is very much related to the Osiris, dismembered Osiris myth, which comes out very often in dreams of the bereaved. In another dream, I open the drapes to my house, and I step out, and I see the body of the carcass of a cat lying at the doorstep. And it's shocking for me to see this. And then I look up at my garden, and there on the fence is a new cat that I had lost over a year ago, and it had returned to me, and it was walking on the fence, and it was wet, almost like it had just been reborn or something. And this reminds me of the statement by Detlefsen. He says, "What from our point of view appears as a death is perceived in the beyond as a birth." I perceived that I saw the death, but then in the beyond was the new life. And then I also had a recurring dream of Mike's dead body lying next to me in bed. And on the other side of his body, I knew there was something going on, and there was activity, and I didn't know what it was. This was an agonizing dream for me, which is similar to the Dark Night of the Soul, which I'll be talking about tomorrow. Now, bereavement dreams contain many visitations from the deceased. And the deceased often describe what it's like for them on the other side to their loved ones that they've come to in their dreams. A man who sent me one of his dreams had lost his brother very suddenly, and he had this particular dream 2 months after his brother died. He says, "I had been hanging out with Andrew, this is his dream, in some way, but now it was time for him to go. I joined him as he headed up to the third floor where he would pass over. It occurred to me, why should I say goodbye here? I asked him if I could walk with him, and he said, no problem. I didn't intend to watch him pass over. I just wanted to see him to the door. He had a sextant-like tool, which he looked through to align things. It was metal coated in black. I saw two glasses of liquid, which he told me was what was needed to make this process work. I think one was distilled water and the other was like a chemical from a photographer's workroom. I let him know how unsettled I was that this process was so tenuous. What if he ran out of these liquids? Oh, well, he said, that'd be it. It didn't seem to be a big deal to him. I asked what I could do. He said, get more of those liquids and tell Mom that she was right about the music, that this one particular CD was as close as earthly music could come to mimic. At that moment, he left in the iridescent mist, and I averted my eyes to give him privacy. This dream seems to address the alchemy of the soul's crossing to the other side. And through the sextant-like tool and the two liquids, he seems to demonstrate this precision-like quality of passing over what appears to be the third to the fourth dimension, or the transcendent dimension. And you can say that it's complicated, and it gives you somewhat of a photographic view of what it might be. And about the music, that was very interesting because his mother had been playing some of his favorite CDs, and she also had been playing an organ, and would imagine him sitting with her. They had played music together before he died, and she would do this. And he told his brother, tell Mom this music that she's playing is real beautiful music, but it's nothing compared to where I am now. Jung had a dream, which was a vision-like, it was actually a vision-like dream following the death of a neighborly friend. He felt a deep concern about his friend as he laid awake in bed the night after his funeral, feeling as though his friend were in the room with him. He said, it seemed to me that he stood at the foot of my bed and was asking me to go with him. I did not have the feeling of an apparition. Rather, it was an inner visual image of him, which I explained to myself as a fantasy. But instead of explaining him away as a fantasy, I might just as well give him the benefit of the doubt and for experiment's sake credit him with reality. He led me out of the house, into the garden, out to the road, and finally to his house. I went in and he conducted me to his study. He climbed on a stool and showed me the second of five books with red bindings which stood on the second shelf from the top. Then the vision broke off. I was not acquainted with his library and did not know what books he owned. This experience seemed to be so curious that next morning I went to his widow and asked whether I could look up something in my friend's library. He wanted to check them out. As I came closer to the bookshelf, I could see the five books with red bindings. They were translations of the novels of Emile Zola. The title of the second volume read, The Legacy of the Dead. Now, Jung felt that the contents of the book itself were really not what was important. What was important is that he was given a message by his friend who had just passed over. And maybe his friend wanted in some way to tell him that he still lived on. It's the legacy of the dead. They're still there. Now, there are specific characteristics to dream visitations. Joel Martin, who wrote the book Love Beyond Life, actually researched over several hundred cases of visitations, and he described several hallmarks, the characteristics of a visitation. First, the encounter is very meaningful to the dreamer. It may answer an appeal for help and emotional support, and usually is remembered afterward in great detail. The deceased appear as they did in life, except that they're usually much healthier, happier, oftentimes they're younger. If they were disabled in any way, they're not anymore. The dream itself is less disorganized and disjointed. They are more vivid, persistent, and real, and feel like very real visits. And the message is simple and to the point, and the meaning appears quite obvious, in spite of what the symbols around the visitation might be. And the visitation seems to serve a specific purpose. The deceased may communicate something of importance about their condition after death, possibly unfinished business where certain things could be found. and may attempt to, actually may have attempts to reconnect with their person that they left. In many cultures and religious traditions, it's believed that the dead actually bear messages to help the living with their bereavement. The form of communication in visitation dreams may even be telepathic. Oftentimes they are. There's no talking going on. It's like they each know what the other is thinking. This reminds me of the dream of the cave where there wasn't talking, there was buzzing. The information provided by the deceased can often be verifiable. There may be details of future events, the whereabouts of lost items, encounters with relatives not known personally, like a grandparent that may have died before this person was born, and they actually say, "I'm here with them," and describe the person on the other side. And similar kinds of situations like that. And the visitation usually leaves the dreamer feeling a tremendous sense of peace afterwards, which was my experience in the cave. Now, Jung had a dream following the death of his wife, Emma. He told a friend in a letter, "The stillness and the audible silence about me, the empty air and the infinite distance are hard to bear." In another letter, he said, "The loss of my wife has taken it out of me, and at my age, it is hard to recover." Shortly afterwards, he saw Emma in a dream that was like a vision. And maybe some of you have heard about that. I think this is one of his famous dreams. "She stood at some distance from me, looking at me squarely. She was in her prime, perhaps about 30, and wearing the dress which had been made for her many years before by my cousin, the medium. It was perhaps the most beautiful thing she had ever worn. Her expression was neither joyful nor sad, but rather objectively wise and understanding, without the slightest emotional reaction, as though she were beyond the mist of affects. I knew that it was not she, but a portrait she had commissioned for me. It contained the beginning of our relationship, the events of 53 years of marriage, and the end of her life also. Face to face with such wholeness, one remains speechless, for it can scarcely be comprehended." This is a classic visitation dream. And possibly it came to relieve Jung of his very deep grief, even though it may have been for a short while. At least he had some respite from his grief and had that most beautiful connection with his wife on the other side. Now, ancient religious traditions and funerary rites are prominent in the dreams of the deceased, of the bereaved. Here are some examples from my dream research. Now, in India, a common funeral rite is the death wedding, where the marriage is a union with the soul, with the underworld. Now, a woman who sent me a dream, who had recently lost her daughter, she actually dreamt that her daughter was organizing a funeral, which was also her wedding. And the women who attend the wedding funeral would wear black and also white. Now, in our culture, you know, there's no such thing as a death wedding, but yet, in the dreams of the bereaved, they have it. In many cultures, it is believed that the journey to the underworld involves the crossing of a bridge, and spirit guides or psychopomps come and help them across. Now, a woman who had lost her son had a dream where she was driving in a truck with her son, and they were driving over a bridge. He was driving her over a bridge to the other side, had her kneel down and give adoration to the Lord in order to relieve her grief. He was acting like a spirit guide, a psychopomp here, and he was actually taking her over this bridge. Now, the Egyptian god of resurrection is represented by the dismembered body of Osiris. And the dream of my dream of being out in the desert going through the body parts is reminiscent of the dismembered Osiris. There was also a woman who had lost her husband, had a similar kind of, well, not exactly similar, but she also dreamt of dismembered body parts. She was actually, had been brought to a place, and there were caskets around, and people were carrying body parts in jars into another room, and they invited her to help out. Well, she had a jar and was carrying it into the other room, and a male, and what was in it was a male's genitals. Now again, the Zyrus myth. He was actually killed by his brother Seth, and his body was cut up into 13 pieces, and he dispersed his body over the land. And his wife Isis came and gathered all the body parts together and put them back together. But there was one part she couldn't get fine, and that was his genitals, because the genitals had been eaten by a fish. And so here this woman was carrying that, and she knew nothing of the Osiris myth. Also, in festivals, there are festivals after a very, very ancient Egypt. There are festivals of Osiris where the priests actually carry jars of male genitals in procession down the street. Now, von Franz claims to have encountered the archetype of the Egyptian god Osiris and his dismembered body in many dreams had by her patients who had lost their children. But here, I lost my child, but this other woman had actually lost her husband. And he was very young, too. They had just been married a couple of years, and they had a very young daughter. So why and how do such dreams occur? Now, the Tibetans believe that when a person dies, that the deceased and the bereaved slip into a bardo state. Now, for the deceased, it's called the bardo todal, and the bereaved are also in a bardo state. Now, bardo states are like gaps between reality. It's the place where it's junctures in your life, and you're making a life transition. And profound things can happen during these periods because you actually are more in touch with this transpersonal realm. Eastern religions believe that the bardo of sleep actually coincides with the transitional period of the bereaved. And that the bereaved, actually the Tibetans believe that the bereaved are actually hang around the earth plane for 21 days. And then they begin to prepare to go into the world of the dead between the 21st and the 49th day. Now, I tried to find this kind of pattern in the dreams that were sent to me. And there is a similar pattern, but not the specific days. It might actually be longer for some people than others. But the pattern is that the deceased seems to hang around the earth and be willing to and even want to engage in this relationship with them through their dreams. And then they begin to lose interest. There comes a point where they become distracted, and it's like they start wanting to pass over. And that dream I shared about the young man's brother passing over to the other side was about that time. This was 2 months after his death, and it's usually about a month, two months when they have the desire to do this. They become distracted, and they're ready to go on. What I think a lot depends on the closeness of the relationship and its complexity at the time of death. Sometimes the bereaved are in a very, very traumatic state and could actually be in a state of liminality for quite a few months. There was one woman, her son had, they said he had committed suicide, but she really believed it was a murder. And she stayed in this unresolved state of grief for at least 9 months. And there were a lot of visits that went on. Most of the time, though, it seems to be around a month or two when there's this liminal state where the bereaved have these transpersonal-like dreams. So the loss of a loved one, and especially the loss of a child, is a circumstance that would most probably thrust a person into the transcendent dimension. Not only does one continue to feel and sense the image of their loved one who has crossed over, but is in a state of liminality as well, a state that is spaceless and timeless and open to the spiritual, archetypal, and collective realm of the depths of the unconscious. The dreams that people have while in this state, I have called transliminal dreams, because they occur in the state of liminality and they're transcendent, and they occur right after a loss by death. I'm going to go into these specific dreams more tomorrow. I'm not going to talk about the characteristics, but tomorrow I'm going to go through the characteristics and give you dream examples, and we can discuss them too. Now, I've also noticed that that the dreams, actually there is a bereavement dream process that seems to coincide with the bereavement process, that the dreams actually go through specific stages. First, when the loss happens, the bereaved go into a state of shock. And the state of shock can last for several weeks to even several months. I found that there usually are no dreams during this time. If there's any, they might be just brief images. The one mother whose son may have committed suicide actually did a lot of transpersonal. She would actually talk to him. She didn't have dreams. She had more psychic experiences with him. And that was during the state of shock that she was in. After the state of shock, they go into a state of liminality. And that's what I described here, the state of liminality. And the best way to describe this is that it's really after the funeral. Everybody goes on with their lives. And you're left here with the ground or the rug just pulled right out from under you. And you're expected to go on, but the person who was so dear to you isn't in your life anymore. So you're really in a state of limbo. And that's the state where the transliminal dreams usually occur. That's where you're having the visitations, having dreams of the archetypes of death. Resurrection myths, funerals, the death tunnel, and the death wedding are common themes during the liminal state. Then there seems to be a search and rescuing of the deceased. In the dreams, you're searching, you want to find them. Dreams of seeking them and finding that they're alive after all, but no, then after you find them, no, they're dead. So there's a lot of that kind of dream theme that goes on for quite a few months, actually. The longing to change the outcome that happened. And after that, there's the separation and parting, which I talked about. The deceased seems to become preoccupied and want to go on to this other dimension, go into the underworld. One woman, her husband, the woman who lost her young husband, actually started to be seduced by a woman in red hair. And so there was this push-pull. He didn't know whether to go to this woman with red hair or go to his wife for visitations, and then he would feel guilty about it. And oftentimes the deceased do feel bad when the grief is real intense. They'll come back and say that there's too much pain here. Or they try to help their loved ones not feel so bad. So then there's that separation and parting. And that's the most difficult phase for the bereaved. Because that's really a letting them go into the other world. And about that time, emotional chaos comes. And that's emotions just really start flooding them. They can be angry, feel guilty, feelings of anger or guilt come, unresolved emotions related to the relationship come up. The bereaved actually enter what's called the dark night of the soul or the night sea journey. It's really a darkness. They feel like they're tied up with the dead. They are, there's a lot of killings, a lot of death images during that period of time. Now, this can go on for quite a while. Actually, the phases that I've described come very naturally, and it usually takes several years. And then there's the state of union and renewal. And that usually doesn't come about until 2 or 3 years after the loss. And this is not quite so much of a given as the other stages are. The other stages just happen. They're part of the grief process. But union and renewal, that's actually returning to the loss, returning to your loved one after you've gone through the period of grief. And the psyche seems to do this to resolve unfinished business. That's usually when the intensity of the grief is diminished, but old issues with him or her may still be there. Usually this takes, for someone to go into this place, they usually have to be someone who's working very intensely with their dreams in analysis on some kind of individuation process. This stage doesn't always happen. Usually people who aren't aware of inner work will stay at the emotional chaos and then go to sort of a stable place, thinking that it's finished when it really isn't. And the final stage is internalization. That's where you actually internalize, the psyche internalizes the image of the deceased, and it becomes part of one's, the deceased actually becomes part of one's soul. There'll be common themes are new births, spirit guides of who are the deceased, symbols of transformation, scenes of resurrection that include the deceased. I'm going to talk more on the last two tomorrow, what to do in order to come to this stage, and more specifically what these dreams are like. Now, of course, you know, when you talk about stages, stages aren't always step one, step two, step three. You know, they overlap. Sometimes you'll be in one stage and then go back to another stage, which is the way it is in the bereavement process, too. So it'll be that way in the dream process as well. You know, you might be separating and go into emotional chaos and then be back to, might have a transliminal dream right in the middle of all that. Some dream images of being stuck or problems arising include an unburied corpse. When you always see a dead body around, the deceased that's dead and you can't bury him, it may indicate that you're in a state of denial over the death. Disfigured or disabled person. I had a period where my son was a disabled baby, and it could indicate that maybe you have a distorted view of the death and its meaning in your life, and a longing for union with the deceased and an inability to have that union may indicate guilt. So there are these unresolved, stuck kind of images that show up in the dreams of the bereaved. So with my process, for the first 2 months, my dreams were specifically transcendental. They were definitely transliminal dreams. They gradually became more personal and outer life oriented in content and theme. For a good 2 years, I dreamt heavily of my son at various ages. 13 years following his death, we finally resolved the conflict that we were in, the time he died, through my dreams. He died at 16. He was adolescent. We were arguing and fighting. He wouldn't talk to me. We just had this horrible thing going on, and that's when he died. 10 years later, he returned to me in that state. I'll talk about that more tomorrow, about how that happened and came about and how I worked through the dreams in order to to resolve that conflict that we had. So it was obvious to me that our relationship continued beyond the frighten and fascinate the living. Who could be a better, more trustworthy guide into those mysterious realms than a person to whom we were close in life and who has just become a member of those realms. So I'm going to stop here. And maybe, I don't know, there'll be some time for questions. I guess it's like 15 minutes that we have for questions. We're going to have a short break and then questions. I want to say a little bit about tomorrow. I'm going to go, like I said, about specific characteristics of transliminal dreaming, major archetypal images of death, and show a slide presentation along with that, and some slides of El Día de los Muertos, too, how the people in Mexico are able every year to return to their deceased, and they just have a beautiful ceremony around that. And then more on the stages of bereavement, especially the last two stages. And then I'm also going to show a video, a 30-minute video. It's titled Appointment with a Wise Old Dog, Dream Images in a Time of Crisis. And it's just a beautiful video. When I was at the Association for the Study of Dreams conference, they scheduled to show it once, and it was just so popular they had to show it five more times so that everybody could go see this video. It portrays the medical and spiritual journey of a conductor, David Blum, who actually lived in this area. And it's he and his wife actually made this video, and it's his fight with cancer and approaching death. It includes his dreams, his drawings, and his music, and it's a very deeply moving video. And then we'll have time for group sharing. So I guess we have a break now and come back for questions.